Lecture 22, I live in the now. Do you live in the now? Are you going to live tomorrow? Are you going to live after midnight when it's 2003? When do you live? That's interesting. I live in the now. And I really do. I have more fun living in the now because that's all there is. And I enjoy every second of it. And I enjoy all of the nuances of it. I enjoy all the silliness of it. I enjoy all the seriousness of it. I enjoy all the fun of it. And, you know, children who play games intensely are no fun to play games with, right? Children who play games joyously, with their heart filled with love and having a lot of fun, finding all the fun things about the game, they're fun to play with. But children who play the game seriously and intensely, and as though the game is going to go out of style if they don't pay a lot of attention to it, they're no fun. Now, you guys are like that sometimes. You guys are like that. You want to follow your spiritual path. I got to follow my spiritual path. I got to go my spiritual path, you know, as though that's something different than what you're doing all the time. What you're doing all the time is following your spiritual path. And then, well, I got to follow it deeply. I got to meditate. I got to introspect. I got to take my special time to do this and that and the other. And you make a joke out of it for yourself. You make a big joke out of it because you're not getting anywhere. You're just putting on a show for yourself and putting on a show for others. Yes, Anita, you do that a lot. Anita sometimes gets so serious in following the path, so serious, I got to do this, I got to do this. This is the way the program is, and this is the way the... Yeah, it's true. It's true. But you don't got to do nothing. When you got to do it, you're doing it wrong. When you're doing it because it is a wonderful, happy thing to do it that way, super. But if you're doing it because you got to do it, then you can be sure you're not getting anything out of it. You're just getting the got to do it out of it, you know. And that's not rewarding at all. Now, I hate a woman who says, I got to make supper, got to wash the dishes, got to take care of the kids. I don't want to be around you. But a woman who says to me, well, time for me to make the supper. This is always one of my treasured times of the day because I get to experiment and I get to try all sorts of new menus and new ways of doing something. I'm going to see if I can really tickle the family's fancy. When they sit down to the table, that table is going to be so filled with love. Ho, ho, ho. Those kids are going to eat, and my dad, my husband, and whomever is going to be there is going to eat and is going to say, wow, this tastes so good. And it's just leftover stuff we had yesterday. But I made it with all my love. I made it with all my joy. I didn't put my hand over it and say, I love you, cake. I love you, pudding. I love you. I just made it with love. I said, hey, this is fun. This is a joy. This is what it's all about. Because I guarantee you, and I give a lot of guarantees around here, I guarantee you, that if you're not having fun, you're not doing it right. If you're not enjoying yourself, if you're not doing everything because it's a pleasure to do it, you're doing it wrong. And it'll get you no place. I got to study my driver's test. I got to study because I got to take the test tomorrow. And I got to, oh my goodness, I got to get it right. And I got to pass that test because, you know, I need my license. You know, if I don't have my license, I can't take my girl out. And I can't do this and I can't do that. You know, when you get your 16-year-old here in America, at least. And you fail. You fail the test. But if you just say, boy, tomorrow is my day to get my license. That's great. Well, tonight I'm going to go to the show. Tonight I'm going to relax. Tonight I'm going to just be myself and have fun. And tomorrow I'll go take the test and everything will be perfect order. I've read the book. I've studied. I've driven now with my dad, and I've driven with everybody else, and I know how to drive. So tomorrow, I'm going to be all rested up and relaxed. I'm going to go in there, and the test is just going to be falling off a log. Just the simplest thing in the world. And it is. But if you're all uptight, if you're all anxious, if you got to pass that test, you just got to do these things, it's no fun. It's no fun. For years, Gertrude said, no way, I'm not going to take the test. I'm not going to learn to drive. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to do that. And then what happened? She got a car. Then what happened? A handsome young man came along to be the driver teacher. And she said, hey, this is going to be fun. This is going to be fun. I like taking lessons from this guy. This guy's cool, you know. And she had fun. She couldn't wait to take the next lesson. She wanted to take more lessons than he felt that she should take in a week. She wanted to take 3 a day. And he says, hey, I like this. I get paid for that, you know. I have a steady customer. But she did. And she had fun. It was fun taking those lessons, wasn't it, Gertrude?
Yes.
It was a ball. Because she was having a good time. She wasn't thinking, oh dear, if I make this mistake or if I make that mistake. No way. She just went in there and had a ball. Here she gets a hold of this 80-year-old lady to teach her to sing. And the lady can hardly hold her mouth open. She's, you know, old lady. She's not a young spring chicken. But after she got done dealing with Gertrude, she's a young spring chicken. Because she didn't realize how much fun it was teaching somebody who was at base zero to start. Gertrude was at base zero to start learning to sing. And by the time this lady got done with her, in just a couple weeks' time, Gertrude was already up to base 75. I mean, just zooming along. Not because she was so good, but because she was having so much fun. She was just enjoying that singing lesson, enjoying the lessons she was taking, and she learned quickly, and she learned with a joy in her heart. And she didn't care that what she was singing was kindergarten stuff for anybody else. For her, it was joy, because she had never sung that before quite like that. And she had never been trained by an opera singer to sing. You know, how many of you have been trained by an opera singer to sing, huh?
Not yet,
huh? Oh, you think the time is coming, huh? who knows? Who knows? And Stefan, who were you taught to sing by?
By my hairdresser.
By your hairdresser. I didn't hear about this one. What's this all about, by your hairdresser?
Yeah.
What did your hairdresser do? The lady was a hairdresser, but she was also a singer in a band.
Yeah. And she herself had lessons from an opera singer.
She had been trained by an opera singer to sing. Uh-huh.
She gave lessons to various students.
Oh, I see. Uh-huh.
To earn a little money on the side.
Yeah. And when did that happen? After you left here?
No, that was before I came here. It was when I worked for Emhart in Zug.
Before you came here? Before?
Yeah.
My goodness sakes.
I stopped then.
Yeah, you stopped is right. But the thing is, you had difficulty finding the notes. Remember we put you on the piano?
Mm-hmm.
And the piano helped you to get your pitch.
Right.
And you always had a good voice, but you just had a little trouble finding the notes, finding the pitch. And you were trained by the piano, and the piano helped you find the pitch, and so you were able to really sing. Now, Stefan, what song do you know by heart right now? All right, sing it for us. Loudly.
I am God, God I am. I am God, God I am. I am God, God I am. God, God, I am. I am 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 God, God, I am.
just a short time ago he couldn't spell it. And now he sings it with such charm. He lives in the now. And he's enjoying it in the now. And right now, among the rest of the group, his duty this hour is to interpret for Jerome, to interpret my English speaking into perfect Switzerdeutsch for Jerome, who speaks Thai. And I don't know, are you doing Hochdeutsch or Switzerdeutsch?
Switzerdeutsch.
And do you understand Switzerdeutsch, Jerome? Verstanden es? Yeah? Would you like him to speak it in Thai? Yeah, we'd like that too. Well, now, could you do that, Stefan?
Sure.
Yep, well, keep that in mind. We are living in the now, and we are expressing in the now, and we're doing everything in the now. This is what life is all about, living in the now. Now, if any of you feel that you're going to prepare yourself for the day when you have your spiritual illumination, forget it. If any of you think that you're going to prepare yourself for the day you're going to ascend, put your back end up first, you know, the day you're going to plan on doing that, you got a problem. You got a problem. You want to transcend. And be careful about that, because we make jokes out of these things, but they're pretty tough. Following your spiritual path, which we are talking about this week and which we are talking about as long as we're at the monastery, is a very wonderful and a very serious thing. It is very serious. We must really be very intense and be very alert to it. But in the process of being intent and alert, we must not lose our smile. We must not lose our jollity. We must not lose our I'm using all these wonderful words that don't seem to come out right.
Joviality.
Hmm?
Joviality.
Joviality, yes, that's right. Our joviality. And there's another word in French, I believe, or Italian, felicity. That's Spanish, felicita. Yeah, which means the same type of thing. We must never lose that. Yes?
Felicitas, that means that you are happy. And joviality is you are kind.
Felicita means you're very, very happy. And what's the other word?
Joviality, that means that you are kind.
Joviality means you're kind?
Yes.
Well, perhaps that's what it means in Italian. But in English, to be jovial means to be a very friendly, charming, happy person, outgoing. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure that in Italy, Italian, it means that too. There are many definitions to each word. Yeah, that's good. You're very wise to want to explain. We appreciate that very much. Okay, I live in the now, perfection as my ideal spirit, mind, and body. Perfection as my ideal spirit, mind, and body. We think that perfection is going to take away our smile. It's going to take away our gentleness, our lovingness, our humanness. It won't. It won't take it away. It'll just take away our feeling of intensity about it, our feeling that we have to do this. You're reading it? We have to do this, and we have to be in charge of this, and that we have to behave, and that we have to be intense about it. Anita used to be so intense. In the seminars, she would be so intense that she would just be upset when we didn't stop on the instant, or when we didn't start on the instant, or when we didn't do something that she had read in the book that we were supposed to do, or read in the program that we were supposed to do. And she said, well, why aren't we doing that? We're supposed to do that. That's important to do. Well, anytime I come along and change anything, that's what we're supposed to do. Because, so to speak, I wrote the program. And whoever writes the program has a right to rewrite it and change it as they go along. Now, who can tell me why I changed the program at any time?
Possession.
A sentence.
Oh, so that we don't get possessed by it.
So we don't get possessed by it. Well, that was easier, wasn't it? So we don't get possessed by it. You see, we can be so possessed by the journey that we're taking. Now, Anita, I'm going to take you with me, and I'm going to go to Phoenix. And we're going to have a nice trip, but it's going to take us about a week. A week to go to Phoenix? My goodness, that should be, you know, a two-day trip, maybe a day and a half, but a week? That's right. Because I want to spend a little time on the Colorado River, and I want to go over toward the Grand Canyon, and I want to fool around a little bit, you know. And I thought it would be just kind of fun to take a few little side roads and look at the countryside. But we're going to Phoenix. We have to go to Phoenix. We're supposed to be in Phoenix. We got to go to Phoenix, you know. And, you know, we can change, can't we? Yeah. And we can have fun. Now, I assure you that while you were over in Italy, while you were in your beautiful hotel there, what you thought was going to happen each day didn't happen. You thought it was going to happen, you hoped it was going to happen, you put it in motion, and then it sort of happened, but other things happened and changed it, right? It never was exactly the way you planned it. And you just rolled with it. And you had lots of fun. But when you ever tried to stay, I planned a dinner tonight, I planned for this, well, you're messing me up, you know. If you ever had that attitude, what would happen? The fun would be taken out of the evening, and everybody would say, let's go home. You know, it's not fun being here. this is a place where they are just shoving it to you all the time. And so you didn't do that. You flowed with the program. You flowed with the changes. You flowed with the people who came in. This is what you want to do on your spiritual path. Not that you do anything right or do anything wrong. You just flow with it, and you have a good time. Perfection is not doing something one way. Perfection is enjoying it 100% while you're doing it. Having the greatest time of your life while you're doing it. Would you say your adventure in Italy was fun?
Yeah.
Number one. Why was it fun? Because you had no idea what was coming next. You sort of thought this was going to happen. You sort of thought that was going to happen. When a visitor came and wanted to stay overnight, had you known they were coming? They just came to the door and said, can we stay overnight? Isn't that right? Kind of spontaneous. And you said, well, what are your credentials? Are you Jack the Ripper or something like that? You know, what are you? You know, I don't want to let just anybody come in here. Well, lady, this is a hotel. The hotel doesn't tell people that they can't come and stay there, that they have to have credentials, you know. If you can pay the bill, you can come and stay, you know. But this is not a hotel. This is our private residence. But then tell me that, and I'll go somewhere else, you know. But you didn't say that to people. You looked in their eyes, and you saw the joy and the love and the expectation in them, and you said, sure, you can stay here. You know, how much is it? Just give what you think it's worth. You know, just leave a little bit, whatever it is that you feel that your evening was worth. Now, we're having a gourmet dinner in about 20 minutes, so go up to your room, freshen up, and come down and join us. And then afterwards, we're having a dance, and you're in the hotel here, so you're our guest, so you come at no charge, you know, and what have you. But, you know, wow, doesn't that sound interesting? Yes, you say, what's all that about, Herb? What it's about is you don't know from one minute to the next what marvelous things are going to happen. And so then, Anita and John, the gentleman leaves after having stayed there for 3 days. And when he leaves an envelope in his room with a token in it. And on the bottom of the envelope, on the bottom of the token, he signs his name. Prince Magnificent, you know, whatever prince, the principality he's from, you know. And he's from, I don't know, do you have princes in Europe yet?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, then he's one of those princes. A prince with a lot of money, you know. And what does he leave in the envelope for you? He leaves a blank check that you can fill in any amount you think it was worth for him. And now, he's got lots of money, so there's no worry about it. Now, what would you do John, what would you do?
I'd fill it in with 33 billion.
Well, what would you do, Gertrude, if you had a check signed by a prince who was rather wonderful, and it was an open, unwritten check, you could put anything you want, what would you do? And what would you do? She said 1,020. What would you do?
I would leave it blank and say, put the amount in fun or total enjoyment and frame it.
And what would you do, Gertrude? I mean, Inga?
Well, I would calculate what it would be the price of.
Okay. And what would you do, Ellen? What would you do? What would you do?
I think I would leave it blank.
All right. All right. Now, what would you do, Anita?
My first thought was to put in a couple of millions.
All right. What would you do, Christina? And what would you do, Irene?
I would leave it blank until I'm really sure that I want to make it.
All right. And what would you do, Stephen?
I would send the check back to the prince with a letter, and I would say, the honor that you gave us for having been at our hotel and the joy and the fun we had in the evening was worth everything. Thank you very much.
And Jerome, what would you do? Yes?
He's thinking.
What?
He's thinking about it.
Oh, okay. What do you think, Jerome? Come on, think quick. We're on tape here. Yes?
Yeah.
What would you do?
He doesn't know.
Okay. Now, think of this. You have a check written by a prince. And you don't get that very often. The price of that room was infinitesimal. It really wasn't very much. It was no big deal. If he hadn't been there, it would have been empty. And having him at your party, not knowing he's a prince, but knowing he's kind of special, but not knowing why, is quite something. The thing that you'd probably want to do would be to, in some way, void the check and then frame it. You wouldn't frame it unvoided, because someone would certainly take it down and turn it in, because it's a valid check. And, of course, it's perhaps written out to the hotel, or it's written out to nobody. But, I mean, he's a very trusting fellow. But that would be the most beautiful. That'd be like your first dollar. Isn't that a show of confidence in the two of you as managers of that hotel? Isn't that a fabulous confidence in you? You could put money in there. You could put $300, you know, for $100 a night or something, which is probably more than you got from anybody else. But just put in some normal figure, or 3 million, or 3 billion, or whatever you wanted to do. But it's not the money. The trust that this person placed in you, the honor that he placed in you in staying at your home and not telling you who he was until after he left, is such an amazing thing, you know, that as everyone says, there's no amount of money that could pay for what he did, or having been the guest. But he wanted to give you something. If he really wanted to give you something, he would have given you two checks. One for, with a big thank you on it and no amount of money, and another with a certain amount of money that you could cash and enjoy, like maybe about $100,000, or something like that, some small amount, you know, something that you could work with easily. But do you understand what I'm saying? Life is for the integrity of it. Life is for the joy of it. Life is for the thrill of it. And you can't buy that. And if you're always looking to see what sort of money is going to come out of it, that's what you're going to get in life. You're going to have money. You're going to always have plenty of money. You're going to live comfortably. But you're going to have a lot of confusion and a lot of unhappiness because you haven't let yourself be part of life. You have put dollar signs on happiness. You put dollar signs on gentleness, on caring. You put dollar signs. You're not bad doing this. I mean, that's a perfectly normal thing for any innkeeper. What do you call them over in Germany where they have a bed and bath and what have you? A gastgeber. You know, that'd be the perfectly normal thing for a gastgeber to do. That is, the man or woman who runs the inn, is to naturally charge. But your activity over there was not charging. And that's why you had such a good time. That's why you didn't even look at that person and say, now, I wonder what they're going to give. I wonder, maybe they'll give much, maybe they'll give a little. And you never looked at them like that. You just said, hey, you know, give what you want. And what happened? They all gave abundantly, didn't they? They all gave well within their means and perhaps even a little extra. And that was kind of nice. So, remember, life is to be enjoyed. Life is to be thrilled with. Life is to be moved with in every wonderful way. And it's not a matter of money. If we were after money here, we would have a big operation here. We'd have a very big operation. We would have hundreds of people on campus. We'd have tall buildings. We'd probably have to move someplace where it's more commercial. And we would have a large campus. We'd have professors and teachers teaching this. I've had the opportunity to align myself with a number of universities. We just had an offer today from Taiwan to align with a teaching center over there. And they have a number of United States and United Kingdom schools and colleges associated with them, and they want us to associate with them. Whether we will or not, that remains to be seen. It's dubious, because we don't associate with people. Sounds terrible. We don't associate with people because we don't want to do their thing. Newport University wanted us to associate with them, and at the point they wanted us, they would have us there. And then they'd have me on their board, and then they'd begin to change the curriculum that we have and the rules that we have, and the whole program would be different. The University of Healing has one task in mind, and that is to guide anyone who wants to walk their spiritual path in the way that we know how to do it. Not in the traditional Christian way, in the traditional Buddhist way, or any other religion, any other philosophy, in the way that we know how. And can anyone tell me the three words that say how we know how?
I like me.
I am God. That's right. Not very few, if any, that I know of, churches in the world teach their people that they are God, even though this is what Jesus taught, even though this is what the philosophers teach. They don't teach it. And when people hear that we teach that, they say, wow, finally. And it's like Dodie, our new member, she read in the newspaper that we say, I am God, God I am. And it was said with a little derision as they were writing it in the newspaper, saying, and they go around saying, I am God, God I am, you know. And they go around naked, and they go around this, and they go around that, you know. And they meant it to be a slam at us and a slight upon us. But every response we've had to that article has been someone who deeply respected what we were doing and how we were doing it. And like Dodie said, hey, when I heard that you say, I am God, that was for me. And then when I came up and I saw how you lived and how you worked and how you taught, that is definitely for me. And she donated her church to us, and that was lovely. So we were with these people in Africa. And these people in Africa heard us say, I am God, God I am, and heard us singing it, and heard us believing in it, and heard us telling them why you can say that. And in the three-hour meditation, it's very definite. I am God, God I am. You know how that is. And those people just ate it up because that's what they believed about themselves. You see, you cannot believe about yourself that you're number one and not say that you're God. Because number one, you are the creator of your world. You are the one who establishes the world about you. And you're having fun about it. It's not a matter that you're so serious. It's not a matter that you're so intense on this. Because if you get so intense and so serious, it's no fun. Now, I get after you for not cleaning the sink. I get after you for not putting your clothes away. I get after you for not learning self-discipline. But I smile at you at the same time. I say, hey, can't you clean the sink? Did your mommy ever teach you how to clean the sink? Don't you know how to hang up your cloth after you use it? All the corners to the edge, real nice. Big deal, Herb, big deal. Yeah, it is. It's just a matter of self-discipline. And I went to Stefan's home in Switzerland, and as I walked in the house, every towel in every bathroom and in the bathroom was squared away perfectly. Everything on his desk was squared away, clunk, 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 you know. And the same with Irene. Everything in her domain was all squared away, right, Irene? Orderly, orderly, orderly. Now, did that mean, oh, it's got to be the whole bunch, you know. I've been in many ladies' houses. Sounds interesting, doesn't it? I've been in many ladies' houses, and I would come in and with our friends, and we'd be smoking our pipe or cigarettes or something, and this was when you smoked years ago. And so we'd come in, we'd sit at the living room, and at the dining room, at the living room, at the Davenport, and at the coffee table, and I smoked a pipe, so I always kept my own ashes. But other people were smoking cigarettes, and they'd go like this here, click, click, you know, into the ashtray. And no sooner would the ash fall in the ashtray, she would grab that ashtray, run it out in the kitchen, rinse it off in the sink, and come back and put it back again. You know, and I was amused about it, and I spoke about it. And that's not only one lady. There's a number of them, and guys. Some guys are fetishes on that, too. And so I said to her, you know, I said, you know, you really should put six ashtrays out there. And then we can put one ash in each ashtray, and then you take all six and rinse them and come back, and then you don't have to make so many trips. And you don't have to be away from us so long. And she says, are you planning to be fun with me? I said, yeah. And she says, oh, okay. But you see, it's not a matter of doing the things. It's a matter of attitude. It's a matter of building self-discipline. Now, is that so good or so bad? The self-discipline is helpful throughout our entire life to guide us and to help us accomplish any goal we want. Cleaning out the sink bowl is not going to do it. Hanging your towel square on the towel rack is not going to do it. Putting your clothes away neatly in the closet with the clothes always facing the right side of the closet with the open end of the shirt and the open end of the dress and the open end of the pants and stuff. Always to the right. You take it out and it's always to the right. And you open it up and slip it on, then you put it in. The hanger always is hooked toward the inside. My God, Herb, you never told us that before. Well, that's what your mother should have told you. You know? That's the way it works. That's the way it works. It's a wonderful thing in our life when we have order and discipline, self-discipline. For instance, you have a puppy dog, and he lifts his leg everywhere whenever it's a strange house because he's got a market. Oh, you teach the dog that's not acceptable. You teach a dog that he cannot do something that his nature tells him to do. Yes, that's right. That's right. You teach him what is acceptable and what is not acceptable, and then he will follow that. And then he'll be a welcome guest in people's houses. You yourself, when you do things in an orderly way, you're a welcome guest. When I have people come to my home, where I live here in the Hermitage, and they're workmen, for instance, and they walk in the door, and before they come in the door, they take off their dirty, rotten shoes filled with sand and everything else, and they set them outside, and they walk inside. I don't ask them to do that. I don't insist they do it. I don't even encourage them to do it. But when they do that, I say, wow, you are self-disciplined. Because then I don't have to vacuum up after them walking through the house with, you know how you leave a whole track and it's really quite a mess. And I sleep on the floor. And so it's kind of nice to have it clean. But you see, Brian, one of our workmen, he does it. He takes his shoes off. And in fact, he doesn't want to come in the house because he doesn't want to take off his shoes. And I say, Brian, I'll set a carpet right here for you. You could, you know, work in and out the door. But what's his name? Art, he never takes his shoes off. And his son, he never takes his shoes off because he follows his father's footsteps. And that big guy who fixed our satellite, he didn't take his shoes off. And you took yours off and mine were off. And he was just all scrubby-dub with his shoes. But he was okay. He was a big love. He's the kind of guy that bends over and you see the crack in the back of his back, you know. But these are people, he's a big man. These are people who just have to do their own thing. And he did his own thing, and he did well for us in getting the satellite operating. So you see, you have to look at these things from two points of view. I'm not his boss. I'm not his teacher. I'm not his sharer. I'm merely his employer. I pay him to come here and do a job for me, you know? So he's working for me. And so he should ask, what is our habit here? Do we wear clothes here? Do we wear shoes here? Do we do this? He should ask and then cooperate. Now, clothing is optional. That's immaterial. And shoes, that's up to him. If he stands outside and takes the hose and washes off his shoes and takes his shirt and dries his shoes off and stuff, then he can come in with his shoes on. But otherwise, he should take them off by just courtesy. But he didn't do that, and many people don't, because they don't know any better. I don't know, does Michael do it? I don't think so. See, Michael hasn't been brought up by a courtesy routine either. He says, I'm a workman, and you got to put up with my dirty shoes, you know. I don't take off my shoes when I come in people's house to work because I'm in and out of the house. I got to take them off, put them on, take them off, put them on. And you have to pay for the time it takes me to take them off, put them on. Hey, what about the time we pay for talking to you and then telling you about our philosophy, telling you about our way of life? We're paying you. Well, we're telling you about that, you know. Is you should be paying us for telling you. But we're paying you. We're paying your salary while we're doing it. And this is something that is so easy for us to do up here. We get so excited about the philosophy, and we go out and talk to the workmen, and then we're talking philosophy, and an hour goes by, and $25 an hour. Interesting, huh? Yeah. That's pretty high price. They don't even pay that much when they go to church, do they? But we pay them. I mean, we're wonderful people, I tell you. We are the cream of the crop here. We are really beautiful. And do we get upset about it? Yeah. Why should we be upset about it? Money is there, we spend it. When the money's not there, then we don't spend it. Isn't that logical, John? Isn't that logical? Yeah. But when it's there, we spend it. When it's not there, we don't spend it. It's not a matter that we're poor or rich. It's just that we live in the now. And we enjoy living in the now. And we enjoy doing all these things that are the type of things we like to do. What are we doing here? Oh, we're 39 minutes. Okay. All time is now, and I come to define it so. All time is now, and I define it that way. I can define all time as being 12 hours. When I came over here, it was noon in New York, and it was 6 p.m. in Switzerland, you know. Time for supper. And but here it was, what, 11 o'clock or 10 o'clock? 10 o'clock. Or what time was it?
Nine
o'clock. Thank you. Yeah, it was 9 o'clock here. And so it was 6 o'clock in Switzerland in the evening and noon in New York, 3 hours difference. Phew, it's all now. When I call my sister in Delaware, that's the same Eastern time zone, She says, well, how are you doing, Herbie? What are you having for lunch, you know? And I said, well, in 3 hours, we're going to have something, I'm sure. Oh, I forget. I thought that you were on our same time. I just, you know, because we're that time, I think you're that time. And that's a nice way to think. I was telling you about the treatment work that the friends of mine were doing, Alga Worrell and her husband. And they would have their treatment program at 9 o'clock every night. They would have it from the Methodist Church in Baltimore, Maryland. No, it was Maryland someplace there. And they were having just a great, Baltimore, Maryland. They were having a great program there. And people would come in from everywhere. They'd have 200 or 300 people in an evening for their healing program. And then they would have special people that they would work with over the telephone. And they'd call them up and say, I'm going to give you a treatment at a certain time. So just give me a call and tell me what has happened to you. And the people call and usually say wonderful things have happened. But it's always in the now. It's always in the now. And we want to live in the now and enjoy in the now. And we certainly have just had a little experience of playing in the now. Where the people who... When did that prince come to the hotel in Italy?
Now, today.
Just a few minutes ago. Mm-hmm. Actually, it was right now, as we're thinking about it. When we tell the story, we're telling it in the now. And we're seeing the prince there. We're seeing him being a prince and being whoever he is and doing whatever he did. And we're seeing him leaving this lovely check in this lovely envelope, which has his crest of his family printed on it, and the check has the crest of the family, you know, half an inch embossed on the check. I mean, that must be tough filing those checks. They get kind of thick. But maybe they're removable. But in any event, I think they probably make a photostat so they don't have to have those half-inch thick checks in there. That'd take a lot of room, you know. But, of course, if you've got that much money, you can afford to have a big filing cabinet take all those checks. Now, that's living in the now. You're visualizing that with me right now, aren't you? You're thinking about those checks filling up that drawer right now. And it's not that it was yesterday or before or it's coming, but it's right now. See, this is how you practice living in the now. Thinking always of everything you're doing. You think, oh, Herb, that's terrible. First person, present tense, positive. First person, present tense, positive. That's tough. That's tough to say it in the now. It's tough to have everything you do is in the now. Everything you say is in the now. Even when you say yesterday or tomorrow, even when you say in the future, it's all in the now because you're talking about it in the now. So you shouldn't have any difficulty talking in the now. It's the thing is, when you try to be practical, and then you say, well, now, I will get this ready for you when you come this afternoon, you can pick it up. Well, you're getting it ready right now. You're thinking about it right now. As far as you're concerned, when he comes in the afternoon, it's there ready for him right now. And he has mentally thought of picking it up right now, even though it's this afternoon that he's coming to pick it up. Because we always live in the now. We always think in the now. We always act in the now. And we always have fun in the now. You see, we play the game that there is a past and a present and a future. And it's a silly game because it's not real. But it seems real. We play the game that we have a physical body. You don't have a physical body. You have a few cells here and there, a few billion cells, and they keep changing. How often do they change? Does anyone know? Every day, all the time. Every minute there are new cells coming in, old cells fluffing off. It's fantastic. How do you think that Sai Baba can give so much of a Buddha away? He's just falling apart all the time. The old cells are going away, and he wears that robe, but he really has a little net on the bottom of the robe that catches all of his Buddha, and it rubs off his skin, and then at the end of the day, his associates take off that robe, and they pick up all that babuda, and they put it up on a table and shake it down, and then they make it in little bottles, and they give it to people or sell it to people, you know. This is directly from Sai Baba, you know, the great guru. And, you know, I don't mean to make fun of it, but that's what he does. And there are other people who will take a prayer cloth, you know, you send a piece of cloth or a handkerchief, and they'll bless it and send it back to you. And when you send the handkerchief, you should send along with it $5 or $25 or $50, you know, because that's just the courtesy to do. And I wouldn't send people handkerchiefs back if they didn't send, how much would it cost to send it back? You know, it costs maybe 60 cents to send it back. So, and then you got to get an envelope on there. And if you had millions of people sending it in and they sent you no more than a buck, you couldn't cover costs, you know. And your volunteer labor still wouldn't do it. But that's in the now. That's in the now. Are prayer cloths real? Do they work? Does Babuda work? Does all these things work? Whatever you believe. Whatever you believe. It has, there is no curative factor in the Babuda. There's no curative factor in a blessed piece of cloth. There's no curative factor in anything. The curative factor is right in you. The doctors will tell you. They use the medicine only to keep you alive long enough so that you can get yourself back in shape again by your inner cells getting the message and being whole and perfect. That's nice, you know? So, this is what we want to do. This is where we want to go. This is how we want to live. This is how we want to act. Now, walking, red hot coals, and a sunburn. If you can walk on red hot coals, why would you ever need to have a sunburn? You know? And if you don't ever get a sunburn, why can't you walk on red hot coals? You know, it's the same thing. If, or pick up a hot pan from the stove. Or pick up something frozen. And people's hands, they, you know, cling to the frozen object and don't let go. But you don't have to have that happen. That's just what you think has to happen. That's just what you've mentally told yourself over the years. Or you mean a little baby that puts his hand on a frozen pot and it sticks there that he's been told over the years? Hey, that little baby is still the mental attitude of the parents. That little baby still lives its life based upon what the parents say. Unless the little baby is itself and walks in the ice-cold water and says, hey, this is fun. Grabs a hold of this, what is it called, hot ice. And it's so cold that it's hot. And you touch it and your fingers stick to it and they burn. You know, you get an ice burn from that hot. And it's cold ice. You know what they use in ice cream containers and so forth. This is a special made ice that is super cold. I remember in school we used to have that because it would smoke. It would let off a vapor the minute you took it out of the box. Beautiful experience. So, the baby doesn't have to be affected by it. It's only when, what are you doing? You know. And then the little baby says, whoops, am I doing something wrong? I guess, and then the vibrations come through and the damage is done. But if the mother sees her child walking on the roof and she's, my God, the kid's going to fall down, break his neck. Is that what she wants? Hopefully not. So she says to the youngster, hey, Johnny, Jimmy, whoever you are. Hey, Johnny, I got some ice cream down here. Whenever you're ready, come on down, we'll have it together. And then at his own leisure, he comes down with his own natural agility, his own natural, Johnny, get down off that roof right away! And he falls, you know? He lost his equilibrium, he lost his balance, he lost his conviction, his confidence in himself, and he comes tumbling down. You see, he's living in the now. If she just says to him, when you're ready, come on down, we'll have some ice cream. Good, you know. And so then he just walks down just like he walked up there. We are creatures of habit. And the habit is whatever we're fed, we act upon. And little children are especially that way. If you tell a child he's a genius, if you tell him he's one, he doesn't know what a genius is, you know. But if you tell him he's wonderful, he's intelligent, he has beautiful ideas streaming out of him all the time, that everything he thinks is good and very good, everything he thinks is creative and imaginative and glorious, what's he going to do? He's going to rise to that picture of himself because that's the only picture he knows. And you're going to say to him, hey, Johnny, hey, kid, come look in the mirror. What's my cuckoo mother got in mind now? And so he comes over and looks in the mirror. And she says, Johnny, what do you see? He says, I see you standing behind me, telling me, asking me what I see. And he is a quick boy, just like Jerome here. And so, Johnny, what do you see? Well, I see my best friend. And the mother says, oh, thinking it's her, you know. And he says, yeah, I see my best friend. It's me, you know. Oh, all right. She thought she was going to get the compliment, but, she was mistaken. And so then he says, and you know, I always play with my best friend. My best friend and I, we always do the right things. We're always loving. We're always gentle. We're always kind. We're always considerate. We're always doing all sorts of good stuff. All right, that's nice. You know, she didn't get the compliment, so she finds it hard to go along with him, even though he's on the right track. And so he said, and you know, Mom, if you weren't behind me, I might forget to be nice all the time. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Because, you see, he senses that she needs to have a good, swift slap on the back saying, good for you, babe. You know, and so he gives it to her. This guy does that too. This guy does that too. He'll be talking with you and asking brilliant questions that'll boggle your mind. And then he'll say, you know, you're pretty intelligent. And I mean, that's a real compliment because he's a serious fellow. Andrine does the same type of thing, you know. Only Andrine does it a little more seriously. He does it with a lot of adult quality to him, which is a lovely thing. I mean, he's a great guy. So think about these things. You can walk on red hot coals, you can have a sunburn, or you can not have a sunburn, and you can still walk on red hot coals. It's your choice. What is the principle of walking on red hot coals? Anybody quickly?
Believe it to be cool, wet moss.
Name it differently. Knowing it's cool, wet moss, giving it a different name. John, since you know that answer, how can I put two files on my computer that are exactly the same?
Believe that you've got two files on your computer that are exactly the same.
John, you give one a different name. The file's the same, but you just give it a different name. The computer only goes by the name. So if you have a file you're putting on and you have another file which you've upgraded a little bit and you didn't want to change the first file, but if you put it on with the name of the first file, it would wash out the first file. So you put it on with another name. The first file's name was John's Best and the second one is John's Best One. You know, you just throw a one after it. And then if you make another amendment, John's Best Two, you know. But you see, a slight change allows you to put it on. So now, when we put these things in our consciousness, walking on red hot coals or getting sunburned or whatever, we put it in. When the boys were up here and they were redheads and blondes and very susceptible to the sun, I merely said to them, hey, up here, we don't have that pollution that's down in the city that makes the sunburn for you. Up here, it's so pure, you will just enjoy the sun and you'll feel warm. And they didn't get dressed for days. And they were brown as bears. And their mom came up to visit them and she said, my God, how did you do that? You boys are that. And then they were lactose intolerant. They couldn't drink milk. And I said, but the milk up here is beautiful milk. Same milk came from the city, but up here it's beautiful. And you won't have any trouble drinking that. They drank it like fish. You know, they just guzzled it. They had always wished they'd had it. But now they knew that it didn't hurt them, and it didn't. But you see, that's consciousness. That's the planting of seeds. That's the work that we do. And it works so beautifully. To move into timelessness is an art. To move into timelessness is an art. And how do you move into timelessness? So you don't go looking at your computer to see what the time is, or look at the clock to see what the time is. You just do whatever you do, knowing that the amount of time you give to it is the right time, and there's plenty of time to spare. It works wonderful. I laid in the other room on Ellen's bed, and I took a little nap for a couple seconds, and as I laid down, I fell asleep, and then I woke up and looked at the clock, and it seemed like the clock went backwards, but no time had passed, and I was quite nicely rested, you know. And so then I got up and walked outside, but it's amazing what you can do with timelessness. You don't really have to worry about it. You can lay down and take a nap and sleep for 2 seconds, and if you don't know the difference, you think you slept for an hour. If someone changed the clock on you and made it so that you look like you slept for an hour, you'd think you slept an hour. Oh, yeah, that was a good nap, an hour long. Boy, that's a great nap, you know? And you didn't sleep that long. You only slept for maybe a couple of seconds. But you can fool yourself to believe these things, because yourself thinks, unless you sleep 10 minutes or half an hour or hour, you haven't really had a good sleep. And you have. It's all consciousness. That's timelessness. Remember that. Know that. Understand that. I live in the now. The now is such a fun thing, such a fun time. Did you get anything out of this talk? I don't ask for your compliment that I did a good job. That's not the point. I know I did a good job. But did you get anything out of it? Did you wake up? Did you wake up to what you're going to do with the prince's check?
Yes.
Yeah. It's not wrong to charge him, and if you left it open, he meant for you to be exorbitant, you know. But where is your integrity? Where is your joy? Do you need to rob from one person to help another? You properly do that check with the prince, and I can assure you that won't be the last you hear of him. You improperly do something with the prince, not improperly, but you do something with greed, and probably the last time you see him. He came to your house with joy in his heart. He left your house with the feeling of the greatest happiness and abundance, and you don't want to kill it by doing what comes naturally. And what comes naturally is to get as much as you can, and that's not worth it. It's not worth it. Even if you never see the prince again, it's not worth it. But if you'd have a better chance of seeing him again, not that you're doing it for that purpose, but you have a better chance of seeing him again and making a friend even. How about that? Wouldn't it be fun to have a prince as a friend? You don't have to be in his palace. You don't have to go around saying, my friend here is a prince, you know. You can call him prince if you want, but usually you call him George or Arnold or Freddie or something like that. Prince Peppy. Prince what?
Peppy.
Prince Peppy? All right, Prince Peppy. That's good too. Okay, we are now at that point. And you will take a moment of introspection, and then you'll go and prepare lunch.
And lunch will be at what time?
Well, you're supposed to prepare lunch at 11. So all time is now. So I say you forget the introspection, and you go directly to lunch, and don't pass go. Don't pick up $200 at go. In Monopoly. The game of Monopoly? You've never played that?
Yeah, but I don't recall it.
You've never played Monopoly?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. In Monopoly, you know, part of it going around the board is you have to pass go. And either you pass go or you go to jail. And, you know, that's one of the tokens you get on the tickets, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're great.
Okay, 12 o'clock lunch.
Go for it. I'll shut this thing off here.
And thank you.